welcome to the one and only Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I'm your host, Amelia Dalton, and this week, ladies and gentlemen, we're pulling out the stops. We're not taking no for an answer. We're getting our ducks in a line, putting the shoulder to the wheel, our nose to the grindstone, our ears to the ground, and well, that's all the cliches I can think of right now. So let's get started talking about embedded software, nanoelectronics, and scripted flows in FPGA tools. First up in this week's Fish Fry Electronic Design Extravaganza, RTOS. We all need a little RTOS now and again, right? My guest this week is John Carbone from Express Logic. And I want to ask John about the evolving trends in the embedded software space. And of course, what RTOS interview would be complete without a little bit about baseball. Let's chat with him right now. Thank you so much for joining me today, John.
Thank you, Amelia. I'm glad to be here.
So first off, it's been a while since you guys been on Fish Fry. What's new with Express Logic?
A couple of things are new. Number one, we've just brought our two new products to market in the form that customers can now download free evaluations and play with them themselves and evaluate them for their new development effort, and that's GUIX and GUIX Studio, our graphical user interface design framework. That's the newest thing about Express Logic. Together with that, and not totally unrelated, is an increase in the level of partnership between Express Logic and Renesas Electronics. Renesas, as the world's leading supplier of microcontrollers, has introduced a processor called the RZ, which is a Cortex A8, A9-based processor. And Express Logic is providing RTOS and middleware support for that RZ processor as part of a program that we jointly announced this week called RZ Express. And with RZ Express, developers can apply to Renesas for free licenses to use ThreadX and our middleware at no cost to them for their next development project using RZ. So it's a great way to get quality software for developers to use. It's great for us because Renesas is subsidizing the cost of the licenses. And it's good for Renesas because it helps them offer customers quality software to support their hardware. The third thing that's related to the second is that I'm about to personally launch a tour of 14 cities in conjunction with Renesas, 8 in the U.S., 2 in Canada, and 4 in Brazil. And each of those cities is going to be the venue for a seminar, a deeply technical seminar on all of our products, as well as IAR's Embedded Workbench and the Renesas RZ itself. So I'm looking forward to that in conjunction with Renesas, and again, we'll be showing developers what kinds of software tools are available for them to use in their next embedded development projects.
So what in particular are you showing? This expands on our last question at EE Live this year.
Here at EE Live, we're featuring GUIX and GUIX Studio. It's our newest product. It's the one that has just emerged into a form that's ready for customer consumption, and so we're featuring it here at EE Live. We have a demo that's a comprehensive demo showing not only GUIX and GUIX Studio producing a graphical user interface, but also we use our USBX software to read the data from a USB stick, and we use our NetX networking software to serve up a web page that can be viewed from a browser. So we actually have ThreadX, FileX, USBX, NetX, and GUIX all working together in one unified demo. The value of this demo, in addition to being a cool thing to watch in action, is that developers can see an example project from which they can build their real application. And the example project doesn't just feature one tool, but all of our tools being used at the same time. So no matter what requirements their new project has, they can fulfill those requirements with a combination of any of our products as they see fit. And they've got a working example to start with.
That's really cool. So what do you think is the most important trend you're seeing evolving over the next couple of years in this space?
Well, the overriding trend that we see, which is I think something you would say is about time that developers realize this, is that the value of software tools in general, whether it's our tool or someone else's tool we're talking about, transcends the cost of that tool in terms of the price tag, whether it's, you know, a few thousand dollars higher or lower than another tool. The real important factor is how well will that tool help you bring your product to market, and how well will it enable you to make that product better than your competitors? Because that's really what's going to determine how successful it is. And the difference between a successful product and a product that's not as successful will dwarf in cost the difference between the cost of a good tool versus the cost of a not-so-good tool. So rather than save money on the purchase of a tool for free or for $1,000, let's say, as opposed to spending $20,000 or $30,000, if that $20,000 or $30,000 tool really will help you develop a better product and get it to market sooner, it's well worth the additional $10,000 or $20,000 you're going to be spending on the tools. That becomes negligible.
Okay, an off-the-cuff question. Baseball. Now, I hear you're both a Padres fan and a Yankees fan. Now, how the heck does that work out?
Yeah, well, I'm proud of both my teams. I was born in New York, born and raised, and grew up a Yankee fan. And wherever I go in the world, I'll always be born and raised and a Yankee fan. I've settled here in San Diego, been here for about 20 years now, and I've come to support and love the Padres. The two teams run their operations very differently. As you know, the Yankees have a history of being on top, and the Padres have never actually made it all the way to the top. Interestingly, in 1998, they did meet for the World Series. And in that World Series, unfortunately, for me at the time, because I had to choose between the two teams, and chose, in fact, to root for my local team, the Padres, as the underdog against the mighty Yankees. Well, the mighty Yankees squashed our Padres in four straight games. So it was a very bittersweet World Series for me. I really was disappointed in the result. But if any team had to beat the Padres, I'm glad it was the Yankees.
Very nice. Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today, John. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
It was my pleasure. Thanks a lot. I hope to do it again in the future.
And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. I've got two words for you. Nanoelectric circuits. Boom. And I'm done. Okay, not quite. How about two more words? Would that do you? 245 terahertz. I know, that's technically a number and a word, but, you know. All right, what the heck am I talking about? Some recent and seriously exciting research to come out of the National University of Singapore. A team in the Department of Chemistry at the National University of Singapore have discovered a way to create molecular-scale circuits consisting of two plasmonic resonators that can operate at frequencies up to 245 terahertz. Take that, Moore's Law doubters. Ha! Okay, if just for my own benefit, let's back up a bit. First, plasmons. Plasmons are very fast oscillations of electrons that can be captured when light interacts with certain metals. As you can probably imagine, these oscillations are so small and take place on such an itsy-bitsy level that we, the greater scientific and engineering community, have not been able to find a way to harness their potentially amazing power. Until now. So, this team of researchers from NUS built a molecular-scale circuit that contains two plasmonic resonators. These resonators convert photons into plasmons and are separated by a single layer, 0.5 nanometer in size, of molecules. Picture a molecular circuit sandwich, if you will. In this sandwich, this team from NUS has discovered a way to harness these quantum plasmonic effects by using a process called quantum plasmonic tunneling. Great band name, if you ask me. Next up, quantum plasmonic... Okay, sorry. So, this team realized that it's this layer of molecules that allowed these tunneling effects to take place. And even cooler, the frequency of this molecular circuit can be altered and adjusted by changing the material of this layer as well. So, regular old microprocessors. If the National University of Singapore has anything to do with it, your days are numbered, my friend. If you want any further information about this quantum plasmonic tunneling business, you can check out a press release below the player on this week's Fish Frying page entitled, Scientists in Singapore Develop Novel Ultra-Fast Electrical Circuits Using Light-Generated Tunneling Currents. Super cool. So, scripted flows. A good GUI is nice now and again. Right? The first time through, fantastic. And hey, there's that little paperclip guy again. He is so helpful. But what about the fifth time through? Or the 50th? time through. You're cursing those flows like a sailor. You want to punch that smile right off that stupid clips wiry face thing. Anyway, but what if that ever so handy tool offered more than just an overly helpful cartoon gooey wizard or two? What if it gave you a more powerful means to control your tools? You know, something more engineer speed with code. What then? Well then, you should check out one of the newest episodes of EE Journal's popular Chalk Talk webcast series called Scripted Flows in Vivado Design Suite. In this episode, I sit down with Ron Plyler of Xilinx, and we dive into Scripted Flows in Vivado Design Suite. Fire up your tickle, soldiers, we're going in! You can check out this Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, or heading on over to YouTube, keyword, EE Journal. Before we go, how about a little EE Journal social media message? You know, that whole contractual obligation thing. Well, if you haven't gotten around to liking us on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. You can also check out our tweets at EEJournalTFM and join our circle on Google+. As I mentioned before, we also have that YouTube channel, chock full of all kinds of techie awesomeness, including the Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by yours truly, and my new video series entitled On the Scene. Oh yes, and by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of May 2nd, 2014, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.